Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. House maintenance and home improvement projects can be daunting, to say the least. And if you're not handy with a hammer or interior design savvy, they can be impossible to do without the help of an outside contractor. It's easy. Trust me, I know this from experience. It's easy to get in over your head. Not to worry today, though. Darren Tracy joins us. He's a licensed architectural engineer with extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management. He's a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber, and he helms the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction firm, which specializes in unique projects. So if you're planning a home improvement in the near future, or you're stuck in the middle of that kitchen remodeling, you don't know what to do, this is your chance. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. You can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Darren, welcome to the show. Nice to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Ray. I'm happy to be here.
And this is a time of year where people in my neighborhood, including my own house, where there are repairs to be done, plumbing to be fixed, and roofs to be fixed. Is this a busy time of year for people who do this sort of thing?
It's a busy time of the year when you have lots of snow, which we had a couple of months ago, and freezing temperatures. You tend to see a lot of ice dams.
Yeah, and we see an awful lot of that in my neighborhood. And, you know, the trick that I didn't know until recently when the roofer came was you don't need to rake that roof all the way, you know, 5 feet up, just a little bit on the top. Just a little bit on the edge, just to get that water flowing. I would go try to do 5-6 feet up the roof, and it's not necessary to do that.
I disagree with that.
Really?
I do. You really need to get the... If you have an icing problem on the roof, the reason is that your house is either not insulated well in the attic or it's not ventilated well in the attic. So what happens is the warm air rises and melts the snow on your roof, and when the melted snow... travels down the roof in the form of water, it hits the eaves, and the eaves are not over top of the main body of the roof, so it refreezes, and that creates the ice dam. So what you want to do is get all the snow off your roof.
Well, that's impossible for most people.
Well, just shovel it off. The key to that is next summer, take care of either the insulation problem or the ventilation problem.
Okay, well, look at this. The lines are loaded at 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. It's home improvement and maintenance today. Let's go right to the phones. Jack in Olive Bridge. Jack, you're on.
Hey, we built a house in 1991, put on standard asphalt kind of shingles. When do I, how can I tell when I need to start replacing it? It's 21 years old. Looks great to me right now. We don't have any leaks. But my insurance company's starting to ask questions about when I'm going to replace it.
Well, Jack, do you know if the shingles are a 25-year guarantee shingle or a 30-year or a 40-year?
It's a 35. We went to the best shingle we could get.
35. Well, I would start keeping an eye on it. I'd say around 25 years you want to take a look at it. If the edges of the shingles are starting to turn up or if you notice any leaks... It's time.
Okay. That's the best I can do, just to turn up the edges.
Yeah, typically, the shingles don't last as long as the warranty states.
Uh-huh.
So can you turn them, can you say, hey, listen, it's only been 27 years on these 35 years. I need new ones.
I think you may be able to do that, but the replacement cost is prorated.
Ah. Well, that's not much of a warranty then. Yeah. All right, Jack, thanks a lot.
Okay, gotcha.
Appreciate it. Michael in Albany. Michael, you're on with Darren Tracy.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to add a portion onto my attic with another roof. I think they call it a shed roof. And I was told that my best bet for that is to hire a master carpenter. And I'm just wondering, what kind of resources in the Capital Region are there available for that type of work?
Well, there are a lot of contractors out there, Michael, that come and go. You can check with neighbors that have projects done. That's really a good source of information for competent contractors. You can check with local building supply houses such as Curtis Lumber, Lowe's,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Home Depot. And you can also check online, Craigslist or Angie's List.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Michael, thank you. Another satisfied customer. Tony in Gilderland. Tony, you're on.
Yes. Now, hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a cracked floor joist. The crack starts at a knot, goes vertical for about 4 or 5 inches, and then tees out horizontally, and it needs to be repaired before it gets really ugly. How should that be done?
Okay, so I assume this is a first floor joist, and you can see the crack from the basement?
Tony? That's right.
Okay.
And it's a 2x10 joist. Yeah, 2x10 joist.
Okay. Is it in the middle of the joist, Tony, or towards the end of the joist?
It's pretty much in the middle of a 12-foot span.
Middle of a 12-foot span, and is it what, maybe a 2x10?
Right.
Yeah. I would take another 2x10 and buy some construction adhesive, and you can put that in a caulk gun and apply the glue to the existing joist, and you can apply some glue to the new joist, and then you want to nail the existing joist to the new joist. And
okay.
I would say for that span, you'd want to nail about every 6 inches on center, alternating top and bottom with a 12-penny or 16-penny nail.
Okay. That'll do it, huh?
That should do it, yes.
Okay. That doesn't sound too awful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Tony. We appreciate the call. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. We talk home improvement, house maintenance, and such with Darren Tracy. And let's go to Carol in Plattsburgh. Carol.
Oh, hi. I have so many questions, but I narrowed it down to one primarily. We're starting work in a house that's along the river, and we hope at some point to remove some of the pines to let some more sun into the roof area. We know that this summer we're going to have to replace the roof on both the garage and the house, and it's a cedar log home that has a cedar shake roof. We've done some research, and we think that we would like to replace the roof with synthetic cedar. And the two questions that I have regarding the roof is we wanted to incorporate solar panels to see about getting some energy via solar. And one of my concerns is that we are in the North Country and the pitch is, I guess, pretty good. My husband's better to ask this question, but I'm concerned that it aesthetically, for one thing, that the solar panels will stand out, you know, quite extensively because the sun, the south side, is on the front side or street side of the house. So that's my first question. And then the second question is, do you have some experience in using synthetic cedar shakes? And DaVinci, well, I shouldn't say a name of a company
well,
on the radio, but DaVinci is one product or company that we've researched. I'm worried about fading because we'd like to get brown or something that's cedar in color.
All right.
Okay, Carol, I'll take the photovoltaic question first. Regarding the aesthetics of the panels, I have panels on my home. I have, I think, about 18 panels on my home, a 5 kV system. And the home is a colonial home with about a 12-on-12 pitch roof. And the panels blend in very well with the home, and often I'll ask people if they notice the panels on our roof, and they will not even have noticed the panels on the roof.
So, what type of panels are they that they blend? Because I've seen a variety in Vermont, et cetera, where some solar panels are a darker color and they don't seem to stand out so much, and then there's others that are more translucent.
Well, my panels are a darker color panel. There's several different manufacturers. I'm talking about generating electricity. I think you mentioned heating with the panels. That's a different type of a panel. That's a solar heating panel where you will run hot water through the panel on the roof, and the water will be heated up by the sun and then brought back down into the house, typically with a heat exchanger.
No, that wasn't actually. I'm sorry if I misspoke. We're thinking of generating electricity, I think, through it. Not we're going to use in-floor heating, but propane is the source that we would.
Okay.
So it would be more to generate electricity because we're in the city. We're in the city of Plattsburgh. We have cheap electric rates, but in this area where we have the home that we're hoping to move into, it's on New York State Electric and Gas, which is quite.
Okay.
Okay. I would suggest you go to the NYSERDA website. And they have lots of information regarding photovoltaic panels, and they also have grant options where they can help you with the cost of installing your panels.
Because they're not cheap.
Right. And that was the other question. It's NYSERDA, N-Y or N-I?
N-Y. N-Y-S-E-R-D-A. NYSERDA.
D-A.
Yep.
And that was the other question was that I know that in Vermont there is some subsidies from federal grants. Is there something in New York State that is comparable?
Yes, you can take a tax credit on the state level and also on the federal level.
Okay, and if I go to that website, they'll help walk me through some.
Yes.
Carol, thanks a lot. We got to take a break here. Mr. Zach, if you please, 800-348-2551 is the number. Our guest is Darren Tracy. We talk home improvement and repairs and maintenance. More on the way.
Support for WMC comes from Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock. Organic produce, weight loss, and immune support supplements working to help maintain winter health since 1978. Facebook, Twitter, and sunflowernatural.com. St. Joseph's School, Uptown Kingston, and Academy of Arts and Sciences offering pre-K, elementary, and middle school placements for fall 2014. Daily tours of our historic Uptown campus, joyful learning guided by faith, stjosephschoolkingston.com. And H. Houston Sun True Value, Woodstock, New York. Since 1932, a local store featuring hardware, Benjamin Moore paint and tool and equipment rentals. True Value, start right, start here. HHoust.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We talk home improvement today. Darren Tracy is our guest. And before the break, you had mentioned that your house has solar cells on it. And it, you said it was a 5-kilovolt system. And how does that work? Do you have batteries that it charges, or do you have a direct converter? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a 5-kilowatt system, 5 kV system. And I do not have a battery system. Most systems are tied directly to the grid so that you can sell your electricity back back to your utility company.
And do you see significant savings on your bill?
Our energy cost is about a wash over the year. So we generate all the electricity that we use, yes.
Well, that's amazing. And obviously, the labor didn't cost you as much putting it in, but I would imagine it would not be a cheap installation between the cells, which I know the prices are coming down, but they're still up there, and then putting them in. It's got to be a fairly large nut to crack for a homeowner to put those in.
It is, and also you cannot do it yourself. In order to get the grant from NYSERDA, you have to hire an accredited solar installer.
Okay. All right. Our guest is Darren Tracy, and back to the phones we go. Edward in Loudonville. Edward, you're on.
Hello. Quick question. I have issues with two different bathrooms and a kitchen, but I don't have the money to just ask somebody to do all of this at one time. And I'm wondering, dealing with plumbing issues, for instance, is this something that one should is better or replacing a tub, trying to get a contractor, or try to individually go to plumbers? It seems like an easy question, but I'm stumped. And then you mentioned Angie's List as a good place to go to find these people.
So what is your question, Edward?
The question is it better to get a contractor, or, for instance, if you want to have issues with a toilet and a tub, and you want to install a dishwasher, is it better to go to a general contractor to to do these smaller projects or to try to find carpenters and plumbers to do these things individually?
If it's a plumbing project, I would try to locate a plumber. But often handymen work on carpentry repairs as well as plumbing.
So I guess.
But how do you know whether they're reputable?
Well, again, one of the best ways is to talk to people in your neighborhood, talk to people down the street, and really, I found that to be a really good way to find reliable contractors.
All right.
You can also speak to your local home building store.
All right, Edward. Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. Nancy in Tivoli is next. Nancy.
Yes, another bathroom-type question.
Okay.
This is a quick one. I'm a bath person, so I have only a bathtub upstairs, and I need to put in a shower downstairs, which would only get used, you know, occasionally by visitors, etc. So I don't want it to be expensive, although I've seen things I like an open shower and just with a lip so the water doesn't go down. What do you think? Is it best just to go with the standard stall shower, which doesn't appeal to me too much, but do you have any suggestions?
Well, you mentioned that price is a factor.
Yes, it is, because it's not going to be used that much. You know, it's more utilitarian.
Okay. I recently renovated an apartment, in fact, working on it right now, and we purchased from a local supplier a one-piece fiberglass unit, and if I'm not mistaken, it was in the neighborhood of $250 to $275 for this one-piece
mm-hmm.
unit. And I really like a one-piece unit versus a two or three or multiple-piece unit, because with multiple-piece units, you can get water in behind the joints, and it's a place for mold to grow.
Yeah.
So if you can fit a one-piece unit in, that's what I would go with.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're
Nancy,
welcome.
Thank you for calling. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Darren Tracy is our guest. I'm Ray Graff. Back to the phones. Bill in Saratoga. Bill.
Yes. I have a quick question. I have a mobile home. It has a metallic material, you know, roofing seal. It's a fairly old one. I'm debating about ultimately trying to put in a regular metal roof with a peak that would overlap, go further away from the mobile home to remove water, and keep it more of at a distance from my mobile home. Because right now I have water that tends to want to try to come into the mobile home, since the whatever little edging they have is really not even a gutter or anything like a lip. So I'm just trying to figure out what would be a reasonable cost for something like a 66-foot mobile home and, you know, what you thought of a metal roof.
Well, Bill, I'm familiar with this problem because we just recoated a roof on a mobile home this year, and we're contemplating replacing the existing flat metal roof with a gable roof, a wood frame gable roof with mm-hmm. with metal on top. I did not do that ultimately for a couple of reasons, cost and time. So we recoated the existing roof, and that's going to get us through this year. But I would say a wood-framed gable roof with metal roofing on top is the better way to go. But it's not an easy detail. It's not an easy detail to tie into the existing mobile home roof, and it's not inexpensive.
So you can't just slap it on the top and just leave the roof as is, the flat roof, and just put this gabled roof on the top.
You can, but you have to tie the wood rafters or trusses that you make up to the existing roof. It's not an easy detail, but it's really a preferable way if you're going to have the mobile home long term.
Okay. Quick question. Is a gable roof essentially a peaked roof?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay. Just want to make sure I had the right, you know, term. Yeah, I've seen some people do it, and as they say, my problem is that water tends to leak in, and I try to put gutters up, and the gutters don't seem to be, you can't put them close enough to the mobile home roof, even with a minuscule drip edge they have, which is only probably a quarter of an inch wide or anything, something like that, to get the water away from the mobile home.
Right, yeah, it's a really narrow drip edge on those.
All right, Bill. Well, good luck. We thank you very much for the call. 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. Sean in Amsterdam. Sean.
Hi, thank you. We're lucky enough to have a beautiful carriage house as our garage. It's made of brick. And my question is about the windows, because it has these old wooden windows in it with the old glass. It's quite aesthetic, but I just can't bring myself to rip them out and put in vinyl windows. But I don't go about repairing them, the wooden ones either. I'm kind of caught in this. I don't want to ruin the beauty of the building, but I don't want to put in the vinyl windows. Do you have a suggestion for me?
If the building is a historically significant building, I would investigate trying to rehab your existing windows. Some research has been done, and a properly repaired older window can approach an R value of a replacement window. Lots of the problems with existing windows are air infiltration, leakage, several layers of paint. By the way, if you have older windows, you have to be cognizant of lead paint that may have been used on them pre-1970. Many of the paints had lead in them, so be aware of that. You should review your lead paint policies.
Okay.
but at the same time, replacement windows are really nice and relatively inexpensive. There's a lot of labor involved with rehabbing a wood window, but as I mentioned before, they can be rehabbed and the R value can approach a replacement window, particularly if you use a storm over top.
What would you do if it was your house and you wanted it to be considered a historic building?
Well, I have renovated historic properties, and some of those I've rehabbed the windows, leave the windows in to retain the aesthetics. In fact, in some homes, you can apply for grants. For instance, some buildings may be eligible to be placed on the National Register of Historic Places. And if that's the case, you can get some tax breaks for aligning yourself with policies of placing the building on the National Register of Historic Places.
Sean, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, we appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Darren Tracy of West Branch Engineering, Consulting, and Construction is with us today to answer your home improvement questions. Edie in Slingerlands, you're on.
Hi. We have to redo our complete bathroom. Everything has to go. As we're becoming seniors, I've been looking into floors that slant to the drain and don't have any walls around them. So my question is, do you recommend a water spout that comes from out of the wall or from up from the ceiling? And then how many feet from the shower do you think that water would spray out into the room? Because the room is a fairly small bathroom.
I would recommend a spout that comes out of the wall. And how far it sprays out, Edie, is a function of the angle that you have the spout pointed at.
Okay. So it's not undoable. It's something that we could do.
Sure,
is
yes.
Is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome,
Thank
Edie.
You very much. Vox Pop on WAMC. Jerry in Stuyvesant, you're on with Darren Tracy.
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I'm in a 1794 Federal that was converted to a Victorian when that was popular. And we're trying to decide on rain chains or redoing the gutters. What is your opinion about rain chains for a drainage?
What are rain chains? What are they?
Large copper or stainless steel or aluminum chains that replace the downspout, and the water runs down their occasion.
Okay. All right.
They're aesthetically, they're almost invisible. I mean, they look very nice, but I don't know how they perform.
Okay. Jerry, I don't have any experience with the rain chains, so I'm not sure how well they perform. But generally with gutters, they work well if you keep them clean. If you don't keep them clean, they don't work well.
Yeah, we ours work all right. It's just the aesthetics to the Victorian house. The second thing is we found in the Victorian upper level ceiling tiles, the little square acoustic tiles And several people have told me just to seal them up and sheetrock it over. Don't bother to take them down with the asbestos involved. Just bury it. Does that sound proper?
I think that's reasonable advice. What would you gain by taking them down?
Nothing. We're not interested in ceiling heights. We have plenty of ceiling heights.
Right. So if there's nothing gained by taking them down, then I would leave them. And by the way, 1794 cool. House, that's an old house.
Yeah, it's only had three owners. It's gorgeous.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Terrific. Jerry, thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Bye now. Let's go to Roland in Springfield. Roland, you're on.
Yes, I have a question regarding moisture. You have an enclosed porch. It's got a few sliding doors and a concrete floor. And I've been heating it a little bit, but it could be way too expensive to heat all year. The concrete floor, I was considering sealing it and then putting down some 2-inch foam for foam insulation, and then 3/4-inch plywood for a floor, and then I was going to put indoor-outdoor carpeting on it, but I'm concerned about moisture building up in between. I don't know if I should seal the plywood floor both sides or what I should do so I don't have a mildew or other problem with it, because it gets pretty damp in here.
Okay, Roland, moisture is a real enemy of buildings. Do you know mm-hmm. if the concrete slab has a vapor barrier underneath the slab? Plastic underneath the slab before the slab was poured?
I don't know. I was considering sealing the floor. I've done that in my cellar, and it worked very well.
Mm-hmm. Ideally, if you were starting from scratch, you would want to put a layer of polyethylene film underneath the concrete slab so moisture from the soil can't wick up through the concrete. Mm. And that would really solve a lot of problems. If you don't know that, you could test that. You could take a rubber mat, or actually a piece of polyethylene, put it on top of your floor for a day or two, keep it covered, and then remove it and see if there is moisture on top of the floor and the bottom of your rubber mat or polyethylene film. If that's the case, then you're going to have to take some precautions to handle that moisture, and those precautions might be putting a layer of polyethylene film on top of the concrete. It's much less desirable than on the bottom side of the concrete.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
then you could build up with your wood sleepers and your wood floor from there.
Okay. I was wondering, yeah, I was going to just put the 2-inch foam down, you know, they're interlocking, but put it down and seal it all around with that.
Yeah, actually, the foam is a pretty good moisture barrier also.
Mm-hmm. And should I seal it all around with, like, that expandable foam so I know that it's solid, or?
I think that's a good idea, yes.
Okay.
All right.
I thank you very much.
You're
Roland,
welcome.
Thank you very much. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. We talk home improvement on today's Vox Pop. Darren Tracy is our guest. And we go to Eric in Burt Hills. Hi, Eric.
Hi, how are you? My question is, we have a small family room next to a garage, and we're going to be expanding it into one large family room. It's about a 26-foot span, and would you prefer a lamb beam or a steel beam to open it as one great space? I'm not worried about the beam showing.
You're not worried about the beam showing in that the ceiling is going to be below the beam, or you're not worried about the beam extending down below? You're finishing.
I'm not worried. The beam is going to be totally hidden by the ceiling. I'll have plenty of height that the ceiling will be below the beam. So I've had people tell me lamb beam is cheaper, but, you know, I'm just worried about snow load and such, since it is, you know, it's a lower pitched roof that's on that side.
Okay. A laminated beam would be cheaper than a steel beam, most probably. That's a pretty good span, 26 feet. You'd have to get an engineer to run a calculation on that, but you could use either the steel or the laminate. They have laminated beams now that can carry a lot of load, and also you can double or triple them up.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much, Eric. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We will take a break. We talk home improvement with Darren Tracy and more of your calls coming up. It's the home stretch, so get in now while you can.
Support for WMC comes from the Alternative Baker, Rosendale. Small batch, all butter, handmade baked goods, plus egg sandwiches, vegan soups, and hot chocolate. Lemoncakes.com. Mount St. Mary College in Newburgh. Adult degree completion programs offering bachelor's degrees in accounting, business, psychology, human services, and more. MSMC.edu. And Rhinebeck Kitchen and Bath, with locations in Rhinebeck and Coxsackie. Offering design, project management, and installation throughout the Hudson Valley since 1997, RhinebeckKitchenAndBath.com.
And welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk home improvement today with a rookie guest, Darren Tracy from West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction, and doing a fine job. You comfortable so far?
I'm fairly comfortable. You're making me that way.
Well, I feel like you're answering the questions very quickly today. So we have a lot of satisfied customers. Let's try to keep on the roll we're on. Joseph in Rotterdam, you're on.
Hi. I have a 60-year-old home and with original kitchen cabinets, and I was wondering, what's the pros and cons to replacing the cabinets or refinishing them? How do I decide that?
Okay, well, the con of replacing the cabinet is the cost. The pro is that you have some nice new cabinets. Regarding refinishing cabinets, you can replace just the face of the cabinet, and I've seen that done well. So, and it's not as expensive as replacing the whole cabinet.
Is there more than one way to refinish it? Is that the same as resurfacing or?
Well, the doors can be totally replaced. Are they a flush panel door or are they have a mortise or a shaper edge? Are they totally flat?
No, they got a tapered edge on it.
Yeah. Well, you can. Are they painted or varnished?
They're varnished, yeah. And it's wearing off.
Yeah. It's a lot of work to strip the old varnish off and to re-varnish the doors. If you had to hire somebody to do that, you're probably money ahead to put new cabinets in.
Hmm.
If you're going to do it yourself, the cost is just your labor.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, you're welcome.
Joseph. We appreciate the call. It's Robin's turn in Fort Ann. Hi, Robin.
Good afternoon.
You're on.
Hello, Robin.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the call. I've got a 20-year-old deck. It was pressure-treated wood, and it's held up very well, but it's starting to show signs of wear, cracking and peeling and whatnot. A friend of mine told me about a product. I think it's put out by Rust-Oleum, and it's called Deck Restore. And he says you can get 5-10 more years out of your deck by using that product. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Robin, I saw that product in a big box store. And I was standing at the paint counter. And a woman saw that I was looking at the product and said that she had applied that to her deck last year. And she had great reviews of it, raved over it.
Wow.
It is very expensive, I understand, but you can buy yourself some more life on your deck as long as your deck boards aren't rotted. If they're just weather checked on top, I would investigate that option.
What does it do?
Option.
It's a
thicker stain.
Ah.
You know, it has some depth to it. It might be 20, 30, 40 mils versus just a thinner coating or stain.
Okay.
Well, that's great. You know, it's expensive, but I'm sure it's not going to be as expensive as replacing. It's a huge deck. So.
Right, and if you can buy yourself another 5 years or 8 years, sounds like a good idea.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you very much for the tip, and you gentlemen have a nice day. Enjoy the sunshine.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks, Robin.
We don't see much sun here in Studio A, I'll tell you that. let's go to Joe in Albany. Joe, you're on.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I've got a 30-some-year-old colonial. And it's a masonry question. So the foundation on the outside is like 3 or 4 or 5 courses of cinder blocks. And it's got that skim coating on it that's tinted to match the house and make it look pretty. But that stuff's all cracked and flaking off, coming off in chunks. I don't know if that's a do-it-yourself project or not.
That can be a do-it-yourself project. You could get out there with a scraper, Joe, and safety glasses and a dust mask. and scrape off all the loose material, and then you can apply a masonry paint to that concrete block foundation wall. And I'll name the name of one. ThermoSeal is an old-time product, but there are several other products made by other manufacturers that may be just as good a product as the ThermoSeal.
Would that go on with a brush or a roller?
It can go on with either. Typically, a brush works better with concrete block because you have the pores. You don't get a lot of coverage with the product, but it bonds pretty well.
So it might be a fairly expensive do-it-yourself project, but something that's doable.
Well, if you're not paying yourself, you don't have the labor costs. The product is not inexpensive. You might pay $15, $20 for a 60-pound bag of the material.
Hmm.
Okay, so that's something I have to mix dry.
You can either add water to the product. Sometimes the products have a latex additive in the dry mix. In that case, you would just add water. Other products, you'll add a liquid latex additive instead of the water. And what that does is give you a better bond, so the product is not flaking off. I definitely would go with a better quality product versus just a masonry cement and water.
Okay.
Okay. I'll start researching some of the products out there.
All right. Good luck.
Great. Thanks a lot.
I assume you really don't do that in this temperature. You wait till it's a little warmer?
No, you need to be above freezing.
Okay. Fair enough. Palmer is calling from the New York State Thruway. You are hands-free, I hope.
Yes, I am.
All right. You're on the air.
Thank you. I got a question about, I built a pole barn 25 years ago, and I'm curious about the poles under the ground. They were just regular 6x6 pressure-treated poles, and I did a good job backfilling them, I think. Does the condition of those poles, I think they have a 50-year guarantee, whatever that means, but are those poles good forever? Because I want to add on to my barn, but I mean, if I don't, you know, I don't know what they look like under the ground, if you understand what I mean.
I do, Palmer, and I don't think they'll last forever, but I think the poles, the further down you go, the better shape they'll be. The critical area is 4 inches from the grade down below the grade. So if you want to do some preventative maintenance work, you could go around and excavate down around 4 inches from the grade and apply a liquid preservative to that area of the pole, and help yourself out in terms of longevity of your building.
Very good. Check the condition. I can check the. There is a slab here, so go underneath the slab.
Oh, it's well. The slab. So the slab is poured around the post.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a critical area. I would caulk the top of the slab at the intersection of the post, and I would excavate underneath the slab in the area of the post, and put a layer of polyethylene film, caulk that. That's really a critical area. Again, the intersection of the ground, the concrete slab, and the post.
Very good. That's wrong. Okay. Thank you very much. I'll give it a look.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Drive safely. 1-800-348-2551. We've got an open line here for Darren Tracy and Merle in Argyle. Hi, Merle. You're on.
Oh, good. Hi, guys.
Hi.
This is a simple question. Is there any simple way to eliminate the condensation inside wooden storm windows?
This would be a thermal pane window with two layers of glass. And there's
No. These are old.
Okay.
This is the old 1850s house, and it's got the old wooden sashes, and then I found enough wooden storm windows that I've put up, but now I get a lot of moisture on the inside of the storm window.
Okay.
Well, some things you might try, Merle, are a couple of things are to keep the humidity down in the house. I know that often in years past, humidifiers were used to make the air more breathable, but in recent building science, the thought is to keep the humidity down in the home so you don't have the moisture problems. What I do in my home is I put the lid down on the toilet to keep that moisture from evaporating.
Oh, so actually don't put water out.
Right, right. For years I've ran the
humidifier. We had a kid that had to have moisture, and we had one of those moisture things on the furnace, but we've taken that off, but that hasn't a humidifier or no?
Yeah, the latest building science is to not humidify your home in the winter.
Ah.
Yeah.
Keep it drier.
Right, and I know if you have drapes in front of your window, that will tend to cause more condensation on your window, so if you want to open up your drapes and get some convection going around your window, that will
minimize. We usually only use the drapes at night.
Right, well,
and
that's when
open it in the morning, but when you open up the drapes, then you see all the condensation in the inside.
Okay,
I put holes, air holes in the storm windows outside.
Okay,
the
well,
question is how big should they be?
All right, well, let's let Darren answer here.
Okay, you have storm windows on the outside. You should have weep holes
right
in the bottom of those windows down at the very lowest point. And they don't need to be large. I'd say maybe an eighth of an inch would be a pair of weep holes. An eighth inch diameter would be good. Now, you said you open up the drapes in the morning. At the end of the day, do you still have condensation on your windows?
I'm in the kitchen right now, and I just opened up the inside window to get rid of the condensation that's on the inside of the, on the south side, mainly on the sunny side of the house.
Okay.
We're hitting our,
well, the point I'm trying to get to is it may help you if you keep your drapes open more than what you have been.
Oh, Devin?
Yeah, and then everyone's going to look in, though, in your neighborhood. So that's
even at night.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that, but good luck with that, Merle. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Jerry in High Falls. Jerry, you're on.
Yes, hi. I have a project in mind, comes this spring. I've been holding it off for many years, but I think this is the year to do it, and that is a 8x18 deck with a roof on it. But my problem is I don't know if I'm going to do it with a permit, because I'm tired of property taxes, which I really don't care anymore. And problem is, do I do it with a permit or without? But the biggest problem with the whole project is I have a water line that comes in, and it's approximately probably 36 inches deep. And they changed the code now to 42 inches deep on sonotube. So if I go and hit that line, I'm going to be in trouble. So to work my way around it, my posts are not going to be directly above my sonotube. How do I work my way around that?
Can you install your sonotube foundation in a location other than your water line? Just shift the post a little bit?
Well, yeah, but my post is not going to be lined up parallel vertically with the sonotube. It's going to have to be offset, almost like, what do I do? If I do a post every 4 feet, I'm going to have to then shorten it and make it like 3.5 and let one hang over further away, and my post is basically going to be in the middle of probably a triple 2x10. I'm not going to be able to do a single, rim joist. So that's my question.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm following you, Jerry. If you have a water line coming in, it's probably a relatively small diameter, 1 inch or so, and you're talking about sonotube posts. They're not continuous. They're isolated. It seems like you could move the post one way or the other to miss the water line.
Yeah, but the whole thing is the last post that would be installed where it should be is going to be directly where the water line is. So
oh, okay.
The roof line's going to have to get extended. Another sonotube is going to have to be put into place. And again, that post is not going to lean on a sonotube. It's going to have to be, you know, leaning on probably a triple rim joist.
Okay.
Not going to get away with it.
I understand your problem. You should contact an architect or an engineer on that. And then to answer your first question about the permit, as much as I don't like to pay taxes, I'd suggest that you do get a permit because the porch will be found out. And
right.
You'll get in trouble with your local code enforcement officer.
That's a good plan.
And, okay, and the next question is, on a project like this, is 10-inch sonotubes an overkill, or you could do 8?
I'd have to calculate the roof load? You said it was an 8 by 18 deck?
Yes.
Yeah, it depends on how often you space those, but the smaller sonotubes may work if you space them close enough together.
All right, Jerry, we got to go, but thank you very much. And frankly, that whole conversation, I understood absolutely none of it. It was like you were speaking another language. I hope there's not a test at the end of the program. Ken in Albany. Ken, you're on.
Hi. A couple years ago, I talked to a solar energy company about getting some collectors put on my house, and they told me it wouldn't work because I have the wrong kind of roof. And basically, what I have is, I'm not sure what kind of roof this is called. It's a square house, fairly small, and the roof on each side goes up to a point in the middle where there's a chimney in the middle of the house. So each side of the roof is triangular. It's not a rectangle like a peak roof would be. So do you have any ideas of how I could possibly get solar collectors? Could I adapt the roof, or is there any other suggestion you might have?
Okay, Ken, that roof is called a hip roof, style of roof.
Mm-hmm.
And if the house is oriented such that one of the faces of the roof is pointing towards south, you should be able to get some collectors on that roof, even if it's not as many as if it was a rectangular roof.
Okay. So smaller is better than none, I guess.
Smaller is better than none, and the panels now are more powerful, produce more kilowatts per panel than they used to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep, that's good to know.
So worth a try.
All right, can I ask you another quick question?
Sure.
Okay, the floors in my house are old tongue and groove, I think 6-inch pine boards, and they have cracks between them, and I wonder if you have any suggestions for filling those cracks.
Not really, because the wood expands and contracts with a different moisture level at the different time of the year. Mm-hmm. It'll expand in the summertime when there's a higher moisture level, ambient moisture mm-hmm. level in the home, and then in the wintertime it'll contract. So not really anything you can put in there. And mm-hmm. that's the idea behind a tongue and a groove, so that the tongue slides in and out of the groove, and you don't end up with a gap in between the boards.
Right. Okay.
Keep the joints vacuumed out.
Yeah, right. We try to do that. Yep. I think it's the thing I'm thinking is we're thinking of renting out our house, and it wouldn't pass the inspection from what I hear, because you can't have any cracks on your floor that would collect dirt.
Okay.
So might need to put in carpeting or something like that.
All right, Ken. Well, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Let's try to get another call or two in here. We'll go over to Bernard in Warwick. Bernard, you're on.
Hello. I built a 16 by 24 foot addition that was put on 6x6 posts 35 years ago. There's never been a crack in the sheetrock, so they're working just fine. I want to build another room downstairs, and code requires a full 42-inch deep foundation all around, I believe. However, in the New York State Code, there is a frost-protected shallow foundation included, where you only have to go down, I think, 18 or 24 inches. Now, is that allowable everywhere if it's in the New York State Code, or does each town have its own requirements?
All right, Darren, we have about 1 minute before the end of the show, so go ahead.
Okay, a local town code trumps any state building code, but most town codes follow the state building code. So I'd be inclined to believe that your shallow foundation, sometimes known as an Alaskan slab, would be acceptable.
I see. And it would be, I only need to close in a wall. So to have a 42-inch all around seems like overkill.
Right. That Alaskan slab or shallow foundation may be an acceptable solution to your problem. You will need to insulate around the perimeter.
Right, with the blue board.
Correct.
Thanks a lot.
You're
all
welcome.
Right, Bernard, thank you. And we are just about out of time. Thanks to everyone who called in. And I'm sorry if I left you on the line. I do appreciate it. We will try to have Darren Tracy back on. Darren, thanks for being here.
Well, you're welcome.
Well, was it as bad as you thought it was going to be?
I didn't think it was going to be bad, and I'm happy we had so many calls because the time just flew by.
It did fly by. Support comes from Four Seasons Natural Food Store and Cafe, Saratoga Springs, New York. Locally owned and operated since 1988, open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. 7 days a week, FourSeasonsNaturalFoods.com. Waldorf School, Saratoga, hosting an open house Saturday, January 25th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. with all locations open for tours, WaldorfSaratoga.org. And The Linda, presenting Garland Jeffries Friday, January 24th at 8 p.m., thelinda.org for more information. Thanks again to Darren Tracy. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell, who answered the phones. Thanks to our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks to me as well. Stay tuned for a news update.